The Regulatory Reform Subcommittee will come to order. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Romo.
Here.
Vice Chair Gio Lombardo.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Escalante.
Here.
Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Daley.
Here.
Goff Marcel. Gregory.
Here.
Here. Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Mariano is excused. McFarland.
Here.
Nixon.
Here.
Pomfroy.
Here.
Overdorff.
Yes, ma'am.
Placon. Robinson.
Here.
Toledo.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that quorum is present. Before we begin, make sure we all turn off our cell phones so they don't make any loud noises. And if you are going to speak, please press the button so your microphone is live. Members, we are going to hear five bills. Hopefully everybody had a great Christmas, great New Year, and welcome back. First up, we're going to have HB 723 by Representative Buchanan. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Rommel, distinguished members of the committee. Good afternoon. As many of you know, Florida has led the way in regard to telemedicine, which has proven invaluable during the COVID-19 pandemic. To address the needs of veterinary services, Governor DeSantis and the FDA have expanded the use of telemedicine for the medical treatment of animals. HB 723 codifies the use of veterinary telemedicine in the state of Florida. More specifically, the bill authorizes Florida licensed veterinarians to use audiovisual telemedicine technology to diagnose and treat new and existing patients. It prohibits controlled substance prescribing unless an in-person visit and examination or a patient is transferred from a veterinarian that had had an in-person visit to hospice care. That is the bill, Chair.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions on the bill? Any question? Representative Overdorff.
So one of the provisions that I saw that I really like, if you could explain a little bit, was the rabies vaccination provision for shelters. Thank you. Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Overdorff, you know what? I glazed over that. That is actually a very good point and something I think I had in there, but maybe glossed over it. This is something that's very important. At a lot of our governmental controlled animal shelters, there's a shortage in the ability to get these rabies vaccinations into some of the pets that are there. And so it's been a big need for us to do this. This is, I think, a very important part of this bill, and I think there's going to be folks that are going to stand up and support, specifically as it relates to that aspect of the bill, because if you talk to folks across the state, folks that work at some of these animal control shelters, they'll tell you there's an opportunity here to get more of these animals vaccinated quicker. Great.
Representative McFarland, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Rommel. Hi, Representative Buchanan. Thank you for bringing this bill again this session that would help so many vets see patients in home. When it comes to prescribing medicine over televisits,
yeah.
If a veterinarian had any hesitation about prescribing a medication for that animal, could they ask the animal to come in-person visit?
Thank you, Chair Rommel, and thank you, Representative McFarland, for that great question. In fact, I think it's not only as it relates to prescribing, but as it relates to treatment. If there's at any point in time a veterinarian has a question, I think it's incumbent upon them to direct that client to bring their pet in so they can have that in-person visit, because there are certain things that will not be able to be diagnosed and treated over the phone or audiovisual technology. And I'll be the first to admit that, but I think it's something that's a very good point that you raised. They need to make sure that they're telling these folks that, if they're not able, they're unsure, that they should come in for an in-person visit.
Thank you. Seeing no additional questions. Representative Buchanan, I understand you have an amendment. Please present.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to explain it?
Please.
Okay, so the amendment is very simple. It actually provides clarification and establishing consistency throughout the bill in regards to prescribing medication, and that is the amendment.
Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, any public testimony on the amendment? Seeing no public testimony, members were in debate. Seeing no debate, show that amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Any additional questions on the bill as amended? No. Any public debate? Oh, we do. We have Julie Moudian from, she's a doctor from Tallahassee. I say welcome to Tallahassee, but you're from Tallahassee. So. Thank you for appearing.
Thank you for taking the time to hear me today. I wanted to make sure that you all had a chance to hear how this bill is viewed by most of the actual veterinarians in Florida. I mean, you hear a lot from how different groups may view this bill and how it will affect animals and my patients, but I want you to make sure you hear it from someone who's actually dealing with patients on a day-to-day basis. So I am a managing director of a practice here in Tallahassee, and I am in no way opposed to telemedicine. I use it in my practice. I've been using it for years. I think most veterinarians have, even before it was known as telemedicine. We've been getting on the phone with clients and giving them advice on how to treat their pets medically. But I don't think that having a physical exam once a year should be a huge barrier to most pet owners. In fact, I think the vast majority of pet owners would welcome the idea that someone has actually seen and touched and listened to their pet before they get on the phone and start trying to make interpretations. As a doctor, I will tell you that there are a lot of conditions that I have seen and that I see on a regular basis that I cannot distinguish between one condition and another just based on seeing a pet on a video. I have to actually listen with my stethoscope. I have to touch them with my hands. There is, you know, just for instance, cats that have urethral obstructions cannot go to the bathroom, they can't pee, but a lot of clients come in and say, my cat is constipated. He's been sitting in the litter box. He's trying to go to the bathroom. They just assume that that is a cat that's trying to poop. They don't know the difference. Within a minute of starting a physical exam, I can tell them that this is a life-threatening problem. I'm not going to be prescribing laxatives. I'm going to be taking that cat to surgery immediately to make sure that they get the care that they need. And so there are a lot of things, and you know, another example that's very important, especially with this particular legislation, is skin disease in pets. It is impossible even for a board-certified dermatologist to tell the difference in a picture or a video between something like a bacterial infection, a skin allergy, scabies or ringworm, those last two of which are very commonly transmitted to humans, especially to children and immunocompromised people. And you have to physically see it and do diagnostic testing to get those diagnoses. And what really concerns me about this legislation is that it's entirely feasible, if something like this passes, that a pet could go their entire lives without ever being physically examined by a veterinarian. They can be adopted, they can go into a home, they can get telemedicine and be prescribed antibiotics and pain medications without anyone ever having the benefit of listening to them to see if they have a heart murmur or, you know, looking in their eyes, checking them, you know, palpating their abdomen, feeling for problems. And that is not in the best interest of our patients. And in the end, it's not going to be in the best interest of their owners, because in many cases, they may end up spending a lot more money on medications that they order over the internet and not getting a resolution to their problem because it's not getting any better. So I think that telemedicine is excellent. I mean, we've got the technology to do it. Let's do it. Let's make people's lives easier. Let's improve the access to care. but a physical exam to establish an actual relationship with a veterinarian in person should not be a barrier to them receiving that care. And the ASPCA, I know, will probably counter this and tell you that there are people who can't get that kind of access to care in Florida. According to the USDA vet shortage data from 2021, there are no veterinarian shortages in the state of Florida. Access to care is available. And if it would increase adoptions, let me ask you, would you want to take a pet home to your family, to your children, if it's never been examined by a veterinarian? How do you know that it doesn't have ringworm or scabies or some other illness that could be transmitted to your family? You don't. There's no way to know for a layperson, and there's no way to know by looking at a video whether or not that animal is safe for a family to take home. And then just a couple more points really quickly. I'm sure there are other people that want to talk. One thing that really concerns me is animals being prescribed antibiotics that are not appropriate for that condition. We all know that antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections are becoming more and more common in human medicine and definitely in veterinary medicine. I see them every single day. And when those infections occur, not only are they harmful and potentially life-threatening to the patient, those infections also can be transmitted from animals to people. So people in the family can be at risk, and those infections are caused by overprescribing of antibiotics for conditions in which they're not appropriate. And if I can't tell the difference between a fungal infection, which is not treated with antibiotics, and a bacterial infection, looking at it on a phone, it's going to make a big difference in how I choose to treat that animal. And I'm very concerned that those sorts of things would happen. And also the hospice care. There is no legal formal definition of hospice care in the state of Florida, unless I'm mistaken. If something has happened recently and there is actually a legal definition, that's one thing. But to say that a veterinarian can transfer care of a patient to another doctor for hospice care and then have that patient be prescribed controlled substances for pain, when there's no legal definition of hospice care, that leaves a lot of gray room, and it's something that I think everyone needs to be concerned with, the idea that controlled substances can be prescribed to anyone, anyone's pet over the phone without anyone ever actually verifying that that pet is in pain, that they are truly, you know, at the end of life. So.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. We have Diana Ferguson from the Florida Animal Control Florida Animal Control Association waving in support. Denise Latcher from Best Friends Animal Society. She's a proponent. She's waving in support. Thank you. We have Alex Steverson from Florida Veterinary and Medical Association, and who's an opponent, and he wishes to speak. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak on an issue that's vital and just to the veterinary community. First, I'd like to thank Representative Buchanan for the time he's invested in working with us to develop a policy that protects the welfare of Florida's animals while advancing the state of veterinary medicine. We'd love to continue to work with him in finding an agreeable compromise. We wholeheartedly support the delivery of veterinary care through telehealth. We just can't support this bill in its current state. The primary issue is establishment of the veterinary client-patient relationship. This is also known as the VCPR. As the bill is written, this would broadly allow a veterinarian to establish the VCPR without a physical exam. We think this approach is problematic, much like Dr. Madoyan just eloquently spoke about. This definitely can be a problem. And also, federal law requires the establishment of a VCPR through a physical examination for a variety of common circumstances in a veterinary practice. In addition, on a foundational level, the physical exam is a critical element of the practice of veterinary medicine. Quite simply, animals obviously cannot communicate with us. And animal owners who frequently misdiagnose the condition of their animals, particularly with respect to dermatological, behavioral, and urinary issues, it's a guess if you don't put your hands on that animal to find out what's going on with it. Finally, we don't believe that animal telehealth should be viewed through the lens of the important work this legislation has done with human telemedicine. Veterinarians treat a multitude of species, including food animals, with an even greater number of diseases and conditions. Failure to identify, properly diagnose, and contain a high consequence disease like African swine fever, foot and mouth disease, these could lead to severe economic effects and public health impacts. Again, we appreciate Representative Buchanan's efforts and are continuing to work with him and other legislators interested in advancing veterinary telehealth. It's all in our interest to have a good telehealth bill passed, so long as it requires a physical exam and the initiation of a VCPR. Thank you. I can answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. Sure. Go ahead now. You are recognized.
Thanks so much, Chair. Thanks for being here. Yes. I appreciate this feedback, too. I'm just curious if our veterinarians oppose the bill right now because of the concern without that physical examination, if this bill were to pass and become law, what stops a veterinarian from just not participating until they can get that pet in for a physical examination? And also, what stops a veterinarian from taking examination but then saying, I can't diagnose this over Zoom or over a phone, you have to come in? I just know that and again, I understand the conflation between a typical telehealth for humans versus animals, but if I have an appointment with my doctor and they cannot diagnose me over the phone, then they tell me to come in. I have no choice but to come in. Is the concern that pet owners just wouldn't do that? I would love to hear some clarity on that.
You're recognized.
Yes. Thank you very much. So our concern is that the public's going to find, just like in any profession, there are unscrupulous veterinarians out there. They're just looking to make a buck, and they're going to take a phone call, diagnose, prescribe medication that's not appropriate for that animal. And so the person that suffers, or the being that suffers, is the animal because they're not being properly taken care of.
Great. Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Would a punitive measure in the bill for someone who abuses that be part of the compromise conversation, to prevent that from happening or try to at least have a consequence if you do use this tool just to make money versus take care of animals?
Possibly. That's something we'd have to discuss and figure out how that would work.
Great. Thank you. Representative Robinson.
And actually, I'm sorry, Representative Escamani, I missed your first question, but that was a concern of mine as well. And I wanted to just know from your perspective, I'd heard issues in the past with the prescribing authority. Are there people out there that would potentially injure their pet purposely?
Like a Munchausen syndrome.
To get the prescribing authority and then abuse the drug. Have you seen that in your industry?
You're recognized. Through the chair, please.
Yes. Thank you. So I have not seen someone injure their pet to try and gain medication. I've had people come in and try and tell me their pet has a problem. On examination, clearly the pet does not have a problem. There's no reason their pet needs this particular pain medication or this particular anabolic steroid. But I've had people come in asking for medication that we can see from physical exam. That pet doesn't need that medication. This is an issue here. So, yeah, we see that.
Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for coming in today. I've heard this. I understand about the animals can't communicate for themselves. The people can, and that's a distinction for purpose of telemedicine. I get that. I guess what I've heard this dermatology example, I think, twice now. How does that apply? That's just a visual thing, me looking at, for example, my own arm and saying I got something on my skin versus me looking at my pet and saying the pet's got something on their fur or skin or whatever. Can you just explain that? I'm not a pet owner, but maybe you can just explain how that is different for purpose of dermatology issues. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Take a shot at that.
Sir?
Take a shot at that.
Okay. No problem. Absolutely. You can take a picture of a pet's skin, and it has a round lesion called a collarette. And that collarette could be caused by a bacterial infection. Could be your everyday normal staff of the dog, the normal floor of the dog's skin that's creating that problem. It could be a ringworm, which is contagious to people. It's what's called a zoonotic disease. It could be the start of Demodex, which is a type of mange. just looking at a photo image of a lesion on the dog's skin, you can't tell which is. You have to do some sort of cytology. Usually it winds up being a skin scrape or a tape prep that you can look under the microscope and diagnose which organism is in that skin, what's causing this problem. And you cannot do that over the phone.
Wow. Your chairman, so I guess your position then would be that people should not do dermatology telehealth either. Is that what your position would be? I mean, I know it's maybe outside your scope, but
I don't know if that's your expertise. But
I'm not a dermatologist, but we see general dermatologic issues in everyday practice. And absolutely, we use telemedicine now in dermatology, but we use it in a different fashion. We see the pet first. We diagnose it. We say, this dog has a bacterial dermatitis. We're going to put it on cephalexin. Keflex, it's a common antibiotic. And here is a two-week course of the antibiotic. I want you to call me in 2 weeks and tell me what's going on. In 2 weeks, I call and say, wow, the skin is 90% better. It is almost cleared up. Well, great. I'm going to refill you another 2 weeks of the Keflex and let me know in 2 weeks how it's going, or let's bring it back in and let me look at it again, depending on the condition. And so very easily, we can use telemedicine after the first physical exam. For the follow-up visits, a lot of times you can do that. If you call and 2 weeks later, they say, the skin's worse or it's not any better. Well, then you need to see them again, maybe do some other diagnostics and figure out what's going on with this pet. Does it have an immunocompromised condition? Does it have some sort of autoimmune disease like pemphigus, or lupus? Those types of conditions, what's going on here? You can't do that over the phone. So that first initial physical exam is critical to making your diagnosis and initiating your treatment.
Thank you for your testimony today. Up next, we have Corinne Mixon, representing the ASPCA. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members. Corinne Mixon on behalf of the ASPCA. We do strongly support this legislation, which provides this important pathway to veterinary telehealth. The ASPCA believes that Floridians should have access to affordable and safe veterinary care, even when certain circumstances arrive, such as temporary financial hardship or inability to easily communicate to appointments and access to care issues. So because we're sort of pivoting here for a minute, I would like to address some of the previous testimony, if we could, specifically relating to access to care. I know that very recently the ASPCA actually had to fund a veterinary clinic in Liberty City due to access issues. We've seen many articles relating to this pre-pandemic and actually especially, of course, during the pandemic. Also recently, we've learned from the USDA that there's a critical shortage of ag vets. All of this information we're happy to send to the committee as soon as this meeting concludes to get you some more information on those access issues. But like human telehealth, we do have access issues, and they were further complicated, of course, by the pandemic, but they persist at this time and did previously. On a limited basis, this legislation does permit the initial visit to be established without that being an in-person visit, of course. This is completely at the discretion of the Florida licensed veterinarian during these extenuated circumstances. Because the bill also requires that the standard of care be upheld, and also the virtue of that Florida license requires that standard of care will be in place, just like it is in all other practices that veterinarians utilize at this point. So if that standard of care cannot be upheld, I believe, and I think we all believe, that just like with human doctors, the practitioner will make the call at that time that a proper diagnosis and treatment cannot be assigned to the patient. And we'll all move forward, and Fluffy will go ahead and come in for that visit. But please also bear in mind that when the relationship is established through veterinary telehealth, because we've heard that, then you're not putting your hands on the patient. You might not find that there are issues underlying. Well, of course, that could be true, except for that we do require the animals come in for shots and checkups, and responsible pet owners see that through at every pass. And if they don't, then they shouldn't be owning that pet in the first place. What we're trying to do here is make sure that care is affordable and that it's accessible and safe. So they will be coming in, those animals, for regular visits, of course. Lastly, members, just telehealth works. I know that we try not to make comparisons to human telehealth. However, I think it's very important to look at infants, because we hear these arguments about the pet not being able to speak for itself. That's true. However, as a responsible pet owner, you notice the behavior of your pet. You're able to communicate that as a patient presenter to the veterinarian and make that case, just like we do when our nonverbal or small infants are going in for their initial telehealth visit. And my goodness, if we can save the trouble of having to take them for these more obscure circumstances to the doctor, that certainly makes Fluffy, as well as the infant that we're treating with human telehealth, feel a lot more comfortable at the end of the day. And so, you know, we simply ask that you look at the facts. There is a shortage of veterinary care. We're happy to follow up on that after this committee. We would like to look at human telehealth as a legitimate example here, because I think it is important that that pet owners can express the ailments of their pet, communicate with a veterinarian, and then most importantly, upholding that standard of care. The veterinarian at every pass can determine if it's an appropriate time to have that animal come in for that visit. And if they're doing that properly per the virtue of their license, using telehealth, we're going to have better access for these animals and more affordable health care. Thank you for your time, and I certainly ask that you vote in favor of the legislation.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Buchanan, we are in debate. Members, any debate? Representative Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. You and I have discussed about my primary issue with the bill is with the prescribing aspect to it. I think if you were to tighten up the hospice side of it, that I think we heard some testimony about tightening up the definition, I think that would align with what we can allow for humans. But the first part of it, the in-person physical examination, that would actually give more power than is allowed currently under Florida law for humans and telehealth prescribing. So I would have very substantial heartburn down the road if that provision stayed in there as is, but I know you'll work on that down the road, and so I'll be voting for it at this stop.
Thank you. Representative Goff-Marceau.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I had only had one question for you, and we talked, and you answered my question that this is going to be under the Florida license of veterinarians, because I was a little concerned that bad actors from other states could come in and somehow get in on this action. So I was relieved to hear that. The only issue that of concern that was like the prescribing of antibiotics by telemedicine, but I could see that being a problem even with someone coming in with a problem and not knowing exactly what it was, and a bad vet would prescribe the antibiotics. So I think that needs to be addressed by the regulation of the occupation. And so I'm gonna support this, but that was my only concern, the bringing the antibiotics. And I also like I feel that the access to care and keeping these animals with their rabies shot, that to me outweighs some of these other issues with a skin disease. We don't want animals going around with rabies. So thank you. I will be supporting your bill today.
Great. Representative Eskamani.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thanks so much, Rep. So I've spoken to my veterinarian. I'm a cat lady, so I have three cats, and they're all senior citizens. And he definitely has had concerns with the bill, as we've heard from our pristine veterinarians today, too. So I really would love to see y'all continue to collaborate and see what compromise can be found. I understand the concerns about potential abuse. But again, I do empathize with the point that if you are a licensed veterinarian who cannot diagnose an animal over the phone, you should not diagnose that animal over the phone or through a camera tool. And so any veterinarian who is doing that should not be practicing in the state of Florida. So I would be curious of what the punitive measures already are in law as the bill progresses, but also is there a way to prevent the abuse? I lean on the veterinarian experts to kind of share with us their perspectives on that. But I do think the access point is valuable to me. I can also see situations, as we've seen during this pandemic, where someone is immunocompromised, they can't bring their animal into an office, but they want some eyes on it. And again, that veterinarian needs to make a judgment call based on their profession to say they can or cannot help this animal over the phone and you have to bring them in. Or maybe there's a mobile unit where the veterinarian comes to that homeowner instead. I know I've had veterinarians visit my home in the past because my cats just could not go into a carrier. So every situation is very unique. I think in most cases, increasing options is positive, but I would want continued conversation about some sort of compromise and also preventing those bad actors. And so I look forward to seeing the bill progress. I know You're being very intentional in that. So I'll be voting up today, and we'll continue to be here as a resource if I can help from the cat lady perspective on making sure that everyone's needs are met. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Buchanan, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. You know, it was a short time ago, 2 years ago, when we brought the telemedicine for humans. And, you know, it was fortunate for us that, you know, we took a lead there and passed that, especially with COVID, you know, it allowed a lot of patients to be diagnosed and treated without having to, you know, endanger themselves further. Representative Escamani brought up a good point, though, if a veterinarian doesn't want to, you know, perform their procedure over the internet, they don't have to. And so I think that's a great point. I appreciate you working with all the stakeholders, you know, the Florida Veterinarian Association, and, you know, coming to a point where we can provide the same type of care that we do for humans. And with that, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. I really appreciate all the comments. Those of you that know me, and I'm certain the vets would agree, you know, we're going to continue to work with all the stakeholders in this to try to come up with the best final product. And there's so many different stakeholders. And one stakeholder that doesn't come up often enough, I think it's the millions of Floridians that have pets. People that maybe have pets that have anxiety and going to the vet. You know, I had 110-pound Doberman mix, of which would not get up off the floor when he sensed I was going to take him into the vet. He would not come out of the car when we get to the vet. And when I talk to people in my district, folks that have pets, a lot of them share that same type of story with me. So that's one thing that doesn't come up much. I also want to address just a few things that came up. You know, one thing that was brought up is, you know, it wouldn't require folks to go in annually. And you could certainly say that. But at some point, annually or every 3 years, folks got to go in to get their vaccinations anyways. You know, so there will be some of that. Additionally, it was brought up around controlled substance, Representative Robinson and others. You know, this was something at the very beginning, last session, when we began looking at this, I've been very keen on. I do not want to be in a situation where we create any loopholes, where there's an opportunity for bad actors to get involved. And so if we need to look at tightening something around that up, although I will tell you, we've put significant guardrails around, you know, what we had previously. So I look forward to continuing to work with you, Representative Robinson, and others on that. Additionally, we talked a little bit about, you know, the VCPR aspect. This does not prohibit anyone from establishing that VCPR in person. You know, and in fact, I think a vast majority of people do that anyways. They have a veterinarian. Perhaps they're traveling, they're away. They need off-hour access to a vet. There's circumstances where that's required. Something comes up. And so this is an incredible tool, and I think it's something that it's great to have some kind of framework and statute around. And so just in closing, what I'll say is, you know, what are we doing with this bill? You know, we're increasing access, we're reducing regulation, and we're improving animal welfare, and that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Great, thank you. With Representative Buchanan having closed the bill, Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Romo.
Yes.
Vice Chair Jerry Lombardo. Ranking Democratic Member Escamani.
Yes.
Representatives Beltran.
Yes.
Daley.
Yes.
Goff Marcel.
Yes.
Gregory.
Yes.
Rico.
Yes.
Harding.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Mariano is excused. McFarland.
Yes.
Nixon.
Yes.
Omfroy.
Yes.
Overdorf.
Yes.
Plakin. Yes. Robinson.
Yes.
Toledo.
Yes.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 723, Medical Treatment of Animals, as amended, reported favorably. Congratulations. Up next, we're going to have Representative Bell. HB 263, Notice of Commencement Requirement. You are recognized.
Line
raises that $7,500 threshold to $15,000, and the threshold has not been updated in over 15 years, and the industry is asking for this statute currently is not being utilized and would want to be meant to make more utilization of it. This is because the average cost of repair to replace an existing unit with labor can range from $5,000 all the way to $13,000, depending on the energy efficiency of the unit. The bill raises this price to account for inflation and gives some additional room so the industry does not need to come back to the legislature in a short time to raise it again. And this bill does not stop anyone from pursuing a lien if they so choose the HVAC contractor did not pay the material supplier for this unit. This simply is helping the exemption to be utilized to the intent of why it was put in place.
Members, do we have any questions on the bill? Any questions? No questions. I understand there's an amendment. You want to present the amendment?
Yes, okay.
This amendment is hold on. I'm sorry.
After I, you want me to go again?
Representative Overdorf, I thought that was the problem, but I'm losing my hearing as I go older. I don't want to say anything. So, all right, you want to start over? No. You could present the amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. This amendment is number 232933, line 49. This will adjust the dollar amount for the HVAC notice of commitment exception limit from $15,000 to $12,500 to more closely reflect the rate of inflation. And that is by amendment.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, any public testimony? No public testimony. Members were in debate on the amendment, seeing no debate. Show that amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Any public testimony? Edward Briggs from Cotney Construction Law. He's waving in support. Carolyn Bowen from the Associated Builders. I'm sure she's waving in support. Waving in support. And members, we are back on the bill as amended. Any debate? Seeing no debate, you are up. Representative Maggard, I'm sorry.
Representative Bell, thank you so much for bringing this. I'm just upset because I didn't do it. So great bill, and it needed to be done for a long time. And I wish it had stayed back at 15,000, but we'll go with 12,500. But thank you for bringing it.
Thank you.
Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Bill, I just want to echo Rep. Maggard's sentiments. I went through this recently, and so if this bill would have been in place, I wouldn't have had to worry about permits. And then just thinking about folks that are kind of doing some shanky type work, I know folks may not necessarily pull permits, but of course that could cause them to run into things when they're trying to get property insurance and things like that. So thank you for this great bill. I will be voting yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Additional debate? No additional debate. Representative Bell, now you're recognized.
I will wave closed.
With Representative waving closed, Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Vice Chair Giolombato?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Escamani?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Goff-Marcil?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano is excused. McFarland?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Flaken? Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 263, Notice of Commencement Requirements. Report a favor. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair and members. Appreciate you.
Up next, we're going to have Representative Hochowski and Smith presenting HB 559, Occupational License of Military Spouses. You're recognized.
Turning on my microphone. Good afternoon, Chair Rommel, Vice Chair Giolombardo, Ranking Member Escamani, and subcommittee members for allowing me to present House Bill 599, Military Occupation, 559, Military Occupational Licensure. The goal of this bill is to further support active duty military spouses when they move to Florida and to reduce barriers for them to enter the workforce. This bill will require that the professional and occupational licenses for active duty military spouses are expedited, their fees are waived, and temporary professional licenses are issued, which will be valid while the application is under review once specific application information has been verified. And that is the bill, and I am happy to answer any questions, and I also have an amendment.
Members, any questions on the bill before the amendment? Any questions? No questions? You're recognized to present the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. I have an amendment for the bill, and this amendment removes the section related to the Department of Business and Professional Regulation requirements so that we can continue to work with the staff and the department on language to further expedite the licensing process.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, we're on debate on the amendment. No debate on amendment. Show that amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, any questions on the bill as amended? No. Any public testimony? We do have some public testimony. We have Christian Cameron from the Institute for Justice wishing to appear. Don't see Christian. And I assume that he's waving in support, so we're not appearing. We have Elizabeth Berglund from United Way of Miami-Dade waving in support. And members, we are in debate on the bill. Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just want to say thank you to both reps for bringing this forward. And also, I appreciate the amendment because the one question I had going in was the role of DPPR. So I do think that removal made sense. And so thanks for this great bill and hope to see it through.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Additionally. Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you to both of the bill sponsors for this good bill. It actually promotes a dual benefit. Obviously, the first is to support our active duty military who are deployed, and second is to reduce unnecessary occupational regulation. I noticed, I was curious last night when I was reading the bill, we have a military spouse rule for the bar, where perhaps there'd be a more compelling reason to, you know, want state-by-state regulation because we have different laws. But we allow this for the bar, where perhaps there's the strongest regulatory interest. So we should certainly allow this for other occupations where it's very similar. The practice is very similar from state to state. So thank you on behalf of many of my constituents who are active duty. Thank you for this good bill.
Thank you.
Representative Lombardo.
Thank you for this bill. It's been served in the military for, you know, now 15 years. Active duty, Colonel knows there, bounce around a lot. Your spouse is trying to find work. It happens, and this is going to help the state of Florida. I don't know if a lot of folks know, but the defense community is a $95 billion economic impact to the state of Florida. And all these little things that we do to help our military spouses, our active duty military, helps gives the Defense Department a reason to bring missions to Florida, which ultimately increase that. So thank you.
You're both recognized to close.
Thank you. I'm going to ask my co-prime sponsor, Rep. Smith, to come up for the close.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. And really, I just want to very quickly close as a reminder, 37,000. Active duty military serving in Florida, and this helps those spouses. And that number is growing because of Space Force and other reasons to make Florida home for our military. So this is a good bill supported by the Veterans Caucus that is going to make things just a little bit better, just a little bit more on a path, which is the mission of the Veteran Caucus, to make Florida the most veteran-friendly state in the nation. So with that, I close. Chair Rommel.
Thank you so much. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jill Lombardo?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Escamani?
Yes.
Representative Beltran?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Goff Marcel?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano is excused. McFarland?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Omfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Flaken?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes. The bill passes. Mr.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, will show HB 559. Report favorably. Congratulations. Up next, we're going to have Representative Maga representing HB 635, Building Code Changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Jim Bardo, and the members of the committee. I'm honored to present HB 635, an act relating to building plan changes. 635 will remove the ability of fire inspectors and building inspectors to veer away from the Florida Building Code, Fire Code, and Life Safety Code when approving or failing inspections. It will also create penalties for inspectors that deviate from the state code and fail to specify what section of the code was violated. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members. There are a couple amendments, but are there any questions of the bill as presented yet? Representative Maggar, you're recognized to present the amendment.
All right, first one. The first amendment is a strike-all. This amendment will make technical changes to the original language that provides better placement for the language in the statute. Basically, what it does is separates the fire code and the building code. That is the amendment, sir.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks so much, Rip Mack. I'm sorry, my back is to you.
Oh, sorry. That's okay.
I was just talking to some of my city folks in my district, and they have some concerns just about the punitive measures for well-meaning planners and fire inspectors who, you know, might reject a permit and are well-meaning in doing that, but then the punitive measure just seem a little harsh. So I'm just curious, what was the motivation for this bill, and do we think the penalties are too harsh, or do you think it's necessary to accomplish your goal? I'd love some more background on just the bill's motivation and, you know, what your thoughts are on the punitive measures.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Actually, it has nothing to do with the planners or any of the engineers. It's just the inspector, after permits been given to the building, coming, doing the inspection, and what the code says, they deviate from that. That's the problem, because when they do that, now we got a major cost involved, because you try to appeal it, and it doesn't go well at all. So if you're having a budget to build a building, and you plan, and you have extra money into a budget, and when you're talking, especially in the fire side, it gets really expensive for sprinkler systems and fire dampers and things of that nature. The inspector, in a lot of cases, and we have a lot of examples, that they will go and basically tell you to do something that the code says you don't have to do based on what you're building. Now, what you just planned and budgeted just got through out the door. I can give you a great example that happened, especially to my company. This is a little bit of a personal bill. We are in the HVAC system business, right? So there's a strip mall being built. And state law, fire code says if the square footage of each individual unit is under so many square feet, you don't have to place a fire damper on a rooftop unit. What it says, approved by the engineers, by the architect, the planning committee, and was approved by the fire marshal's office. When we get down for the final, the inspector comes up and says, I want fire dampers. That's $3,500 a unit times 12. Plus, you got to go get the crane, take it back off, and redo a complete installation that you eat. And that's why the penalty's there. Only thing they got to do is show me where the penalty, where it's wrong. We're not saying at all, if it's against the code, we want a red tag. Tell us it's wrong. We're fine. But you can't deviate what the code says because you like it better. And that's the purpose of this whole bill. You're welcome.
Additional question? No additional questions. Representative Maggar, I understand there's an amendment to the amendment. Please present that.
Yes. The amendment to the amendment adds language to the bill that will make the process of obtaining a permit from local governments easier when demolition single-family structures in flood-prone areas. That's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Great. Members, any questions on the amendment to the amendment? Representative Escamani.
Sorry, I have another question. So I heard from some of our coastal communities that have areas of critical concern, environmental concerns, where they have to seek sometimes DEP approval in order to pursue a permit of demolition or construction. So I'm just curious if you've heard similar feedback, and would you be amendable to an amendment to keep in consideration areas of critical concern that might be environmentally sensitive to specific projects.
Representative.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I learned about that today. We are agreeable. We are looking at that, and we will take that in consideration. You're welcome.
Representative Overdorf.
Thank you so much. Representative Maggard, and along the lines of Representative Escamani's question, aren't we really looking, when you're looking at fire inspection and things along those lines, you're already in construction at that point in time, and those inspectors are coming out to see if, in fact, something is, whether it be wired correctly or dug correctly, et cetera. I would suggest, and it's my belief, and I would like to know if it's yours as well, if, in fact, the environmentally sensitive lands have already been addressed prior to groundbreaking.
You're recognized?
I don't know that answer. And I think, yes, they have. Now that I went through this amendment, thank you.
Follow? No?
That's as good as I got. I studied this as good as I could.
We can get some clarification. There is some public testimony, seeing no more questions. Up first, we have John Pascalone from the Florida Fire Marshals Inspector Association, and he is a proponent of the bill, and he wishes to speak. Waiving in support of the First Amendment, not the amendment to the amendment. Okay. And then we have Daniel Olson from the Florida Fire Sprinkler Association. Waiving in support of the First Amendment? Okay. Waiving versus support of the First Amendment. Okay. Members, hold on, let me make sure we're... Members, we are back in debate on the bill... Now we're on the amendment to the amendment. Any debate on the amendment to the amendment? Without objection, show that amendment as adopted. Members, are there questions on the amendment? As amended, yes. Okay, seeing no questions, we're back on public testimony on, and we have Daniel Olson again. Waiving in support on the amendment, and Dan Pascalone, waiving in support on the amendment again. Okay, we're good there. We are now in debate on the amendment. No debate. Recognize the close. Without any objection, show the amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, as to the relating to the clause, this bill has been amended. Pursuant to Rule 7.11D, this bill is temporarily postponed without motion. Show the bill TP'd. Representative Maggard, please present HB 669, Alarm Systems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm honored to present HB 669, an act relating to alarm systems. This bill will streamline continuing education for our fire alarm system agents and simplify the permitting process for a limited number of fire alarm components. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, Representative Maggard, I understand there's an amendment.
Yes, sir.
You are recognized to explain Amendment 1.
Thank you. The amendment clarifies Florida statute regarding closed-circuit TVs. Clearly defines fire alarm system project in Florida statute, requires at least one inspection for a fire alarm project, and requires that the plans for fire alarm projects be kept at the work site. That's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, public testimony? No public testimony on amendment? Members, are we wishing to debate the amendment? No debate. Show that amendment is adopted without objection. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions, public testimony. Holy cow, a lot of people are interested in this one. Christian Cameron from the Institute for Justice, waving in support. Diane Ferguson from ADT, waving in support. Philip Sutterman from Americans for Prosperity, wishing to speak, but I don't see him. Waving in support. David Shep from Florida Automatic Fire Alarm Association, waving in support. Appreciate that. And Erica Prutzman from Alarm Association of Florida, waving in support. Okay. Members, any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate. Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Vice Chair Joe Lombardo? Ranking Democratic Member Escomani?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Goff Marcel?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Rico?
Yes.
Harding? Maggard? Yes. Mariano is excused. McFarland?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Omfroy?
Yes.
Oberdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Clayton? Yes. Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Thank you. Members, by your vote, we show HB 669 reported favorably with committee substitute. Members, we got through our first week of the year in good form, and Representative Daley moves we rise without objection. The meeting is adjourned.